In India, there's currently 1 billion pads thrown into the landfill every month. My brand and my product was that I didn't want it to look and feel like a period product. I wanted the brand to fit very seamlessly into what any woman would consider to be a cool or relatable brand.
I'm having quite a crash course in women's health, I think.
Some women still will not say that I'm on my period. They'll use a code word or whatever it is.
Thin layer, extra gel, blah, 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 blah. There's like so much stuff to it, right? It's very confusing.
A lot of these brands have been created by men.
The fun for us lies in creating value.
A friend of mine called me and she said, you know, this period underwear is really blowing up in Europe. Why don't you check it out?
The reusability aspect of it, do you think it's going to go against you more than for you?
This is... Hi, I'm Avisha. I'm the founder of Nushu Period Underwear. We are looking to solve many problems within the menstrual space. One is that the fact that there's a lack of options in the market, there's a lack of comfortable options and a lack of sustainable options as well. The menstrual industry is a very polluting industry in India as well as in other parts of the world. We find menstruation is viewed too much as a woman's weakness, and we are trying to shift that narrative to, shift the perspective of seeing it as a woman's strength and society's strength as well.
Lovely. So, in fact, this has coincidentally fallen on a very topical note. I have, and we have been speaking to a fair few people who are involved in this field. In fact, we recorded with Anahat just yesterday. And we spoke to Sanjana of the Pink Box today. So I was talking to a friend of mine and I was like, you know, I'm having quite a crash course in women's health, I think.
Yeah, we even had a very brief talk with Fempower just 3 days back. So I think it's been one after the other.
So I think both of us have had a very, I think crash course in women's health is a good way to put it. But... Avisha, why in your opinion is this something that's not talked about, that's not made aware, and why do we as a species, I would say pretty much, not really speak about this?
So I think it started with good intention. Rewind 100 plus years when women were part of the labor force in some sense, you know, even if it was domestic labor. The whole, when a woman is on her period is when your body is completely zapped of energy, you're really exhausted, your body is taking a toll on you. And all of the taboo, like, let's say restrictions, started then, you know, not going to the temple, being kind of isolated within your own home, not being able to enter the kitchen. These kinds of restrictions were brought about to give the woman, to force rest upon the woman so that, you know, she can really rest and recuperate when her body is really requiring her to. I think what happened along the way is that these good-intentioned ideas got sort of manipulated along the way. And I guess, you know, the world and the rising patriarchy perhaps twisted it in a way to kind of display it as a weakness and as something that's impure and something we shouldn't really talk about. And I think now there's a huge turning point that's happening in the last, I would say, 5+ years. And, you know, people are talking more about it. People are very interested to, when I say people, I mean not just women, but even men and boys, teenage boys as well. They're all very interested to know what goes on, because it clearly is something that has such a huge impact on a woman's life, her mood, her energy. And I think learning about it shines more light upon menstruation and women's health, And as a result, we can all live in better wellness by just being more aware and more educated about the topic.
I feel on the men's front, when you see your counterpart, you know, on a monthly basis, when you see them suffer, when you see them in pain, you also wish to learn what exactly is happening with them.
No, I was just going to say from a male perspective, you know, if you do have a wife or a girlfriend, it's actually in your best interest to learn about it, because then you know when you need to tread lightly. I keep telling my husband, you know, you should be putting my cycle in your calendar, because I don't want to tell you over and over again when you need to tread lightly. And, you know, it's just, we fight a lot more during those days. So just know about it, be aware about it, so that, you know, there's less friction during that time.
Abhisha, I remember when I had to go and buy a set of pads for my girlfriend the first time. And I remember being very awkward about it because, again, conversation had never happened or like the thing had. So what brought you into this space and what is the change that you're trying to make?
So, you know, I used to have a clothing brand and it was resort wear in a sense. And I always had a giving back model woven into our sales. So for every piece sold, we initially started with giving back 10 meals to the homeless. And within a few months, I changed that. And I said, you know, it's a women's brand. I'm someone that's always been very much into women's issues, grown up with a very large sisterhood surrounding me. And so I thought, okay, why don't I switch this giving back model to giving back 5 pads for every piece that's sold. So I tied up with a brand in Hong Kong and I said, you know, sell it to me at cost. And, you know, this is what I would like to do, because, and I marketed it as well. I wanted conversation to people to speak about this more, and also for there to be awareness about period poverty and how it's actually a luxury to have, you know, period management tools at your fingertips. So that is sort of where it all sort of struck from a more professional angle. And then the clothing business was going on during COVID. So I was stuck in Hong Kong, which is not a great market for fashion. And I hit a ceiling very quickly. And just around that similar time, a friend of mine called me and she said, you know, this period underwear is really blowing up in Europe. Why don't you check it out? And so I checked it out. I bought a piece and I tried it. And it was just, for me, it was an overnight switch. It made me see my period in such a positive light. It was not something to dispose of. And it was, the product was just so comfortable. You know, it was made with premium fabric that can be used for 2 years. So just that in itself was a big push to start this and really, you know, hope that this product can help society change the way that they see their period, like the way that they see menstruation as a subject.
I wish to expand on Vishrut's experience. It gets so confusing. So in the US, when you enter Target or you enter Walmart, you're not hit with like one brand or two brands or one type or two types or like thin layer, extra gel, blah, 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 blah. There's like so much stuff to it, right? It's very confusing. And you are entering this industry as another one of the add-ons, right? So I wish to understand that a little better. If you do go in as a dude or as a lady and you're there to buy something, what makes it easier? Like what should I look for and what should she look for?
So, you know, one main distinguisher is whether you want something that you insert inside, which is tampons and cups, or whether it's something that, you know, like pad or now also period underwear will be under that category. So that's the first thing to determine. And then you have to think about your flow. How heavy is your flow? And what kind of a product do you need to support that? then you have to understand your flow and see, you know, what kind of product, what kind of thickness or heaviness you need to support that. It will take a bit of trial and error. And then, you know, you see also the fabrication, and that's the crazy thing is that a lot of these pad brands, they don't put the fabrication on, you know, on the packaging. So women are so oblivious to what they're actually using and what kind of chemicals and materials are used in these products that are used in a very sensitive part of your body. So I would say, you know, that's definitely something that brands and companies need to do a little bit more, is put the fabrication on very clearly on the packaging. You know, they're more concerned about putting fragrance and this and that. And so, yeah, there is a lot, and they're all very bright colors and they all are packaged very similarly. But women tend to have a brand that they're loyal to, that they've been using all these years. So usually she knows what she's going in for.
Why I ask you this is because you must have had the same overwhelming experience, right? When, you know, the world around you starts changing, and then you come up with this idea and you come up with the development of this idea. What goes in your mind, right? You're entering a very saturated space, and in that space, you're wishing to develop something which is so customized on a person-to-person basis. So what goes on in your mind to develop something like that? What kind of customization do you feel that the ladies would look at in order to buy your product?
So I think that what made it easy for me to conceptualize my brand and my product was that I didn't want it to look and feel like a period product. I wanted the brand to fit very seamlessly into what any woman would consider to be a cool or a relatable brand. So with that, instantly, you know, and because I've been in fashion, I was very much like, I just want to create a cool brand, you know, with nice colors and nice fonts, and I want to be warm and inviting. So it was very gearing away from what period brands, what most period brands are like today. Like, for example, I would compare period brands similar to dental care, you know, the look and feel of the brand. Bright colors, quite jarring sort of graphics and imagery. And I really wanted to steer away from that because I think current products in the market are not doing justice to what it is to menstruate. And I really wanted to, my whole goal is to shift that narrative completely.
So Avisha, Akhil and I are both a little concerned, or I would say a little on edge, because we live in an environment where people get offended at the drop of a pin. And both of us guys asking you questions about periods, asking you questions about menstruation, about products, stuff that we have never really been educated about. We have learned as we saw, or learned as per experience. How do you deal with that? And, you know, how do we go about not offending people by asking questions or being inquisitive or trying to understand more? You know, we don't want to use the wrong words, or don't want to use the wrong tone. Forget even the words. I think even today, even tone is enough to put people off.
And why are we uncomfortable, right? Because why has society built us up to be uncomfortable talking about this stuff? That's another one of the very major topics.
Absolutely. You know, it's really deep conditioning. And I'll tell you, I'm someone who's in the industry and I'm a woman. And I would consider myself to be somewhat of a feminist as well. But now I've gotten used to it because I've been seeing it so much. But initially, when people would ask me what I'm doing, and even, you know, older relatives of mine, there would always be a second where I hesitate. Like, you know, now I've gotten used to it. And you have some guys who are very interested. And they'll ask a lot of questions, and how does it work? And, you know, this space really interests me. And then, of course, you have some that are like, oh, okay, cool. You know, and they're not really interested in, you know, getting further into the topic. And I think both are absolutely fine. And, you know, even for women, like, some women still will not say that I'm on my period. They'll use a code word or whatever it is. And while I don't think there's anything wrong with that, I do think it is time for a change. And I think the change will come from women themselves, and then it'll spread to the rest of society as well. So hence, again, I'll bring it back to my product. And, you know, the whole, really, this product is to, for a woman to see her period as not something to dispose of. Like, it's really to normalize it, you know, and let it feel like a normal day with a bit of extra exhaustion, which definitely comes along with it. But yeah, for you to just feel like it's normal.
How has your brand been, like, what has the reception been like? How have the people liked it?
Yeah, so we've gotten good feedback. And, you know, for some people, it's a very quick, oh my God, I love it. I cannot go back to using pads. I'm converted, you know, after 12 hours of using it. So we do get feedback like that, which just puts us over the moon. And then we also get feedback like, oh, I like it, but it's going to take me time to get used to it. We get all sorts of feedback. Even some girls that say, it's great for, you know, for when I sleep, or it's great for my third day onwards. So we get all sorts of feedback. And I think it's different based on a woman's body, on a woman's flow. And that's all so unique to the individual. But that's what we think where our product comes in really well, is that it can fit into any part of your cycle and it will improve that part in which you're utilizing.
Since we've spoken so much about the product, let's get a sales pitch. What is the product? How does it work? And, you know, how is it different to a pad or a tampon? Or what exactly is reusable period underwear?
Great. Well, I have some samples with me I'll use to describe my pitch. So this is Nushu reusable period underwear. And this underwear can be used for up to 2 years, so you can wash and reuse it. And we have 3 levels of absorbency. We have super heavy, heavy, and medium. And the super heavy one can absorb up to 6 parts of blood. So you don't, depending on your flow, you don't have to change in the middle of the day. You can wear this, change in the evening when you come back home if you feel the need to. And basically the way that it works is that there's In sort of the crotch area of the underwear, we have a built-in padding, absorbent padding, which is comprised of 4 layers. And the middle layer is made with microfiber, which is like a micro towel material that's often used for household cleaning. So it's a very absorbent material. And beneath that layer is a TPU-coated layer, which prevents any leakage from happening. So that's where, you know, it's that's how you get a high absorbent capacity. And it's also built to your body size, right? We go off of body size. So it's not going to move around. It's going to stay very much in shape. And it's a very sort of streamlined product. So that is what it's all about.
So Avisha, you say it lasts for 2 years. What is the sort of experimentation that goes on? Where does this 2-year number come from? Because you mentioned even the European underwear that was recommended to you during COVID that sort of brought you onto this direction was also a 2-year, you know, lifespan product. So where does this 2-year number come from?
So we say 2 years as a general wear and tear for any kind of garment that you use often. And the number of washes as well. We want to make sure that the product is going to function. And also after 2 years, generally one should refresh their intimate garments just to, you know, have a fresh pair. And kind of we say that the lifespan can be more than 2 years. Some brands claim for 3 years. But we say just to have the product at its optimal functionality, we give a 2-year shelf life.
Oh, got it. So what is the kind of testing involved in it? That's what I was trying to get at.
So we did a lot of testing with different fabrics, especially for our top layer, because that's a layer that's in contact with the skin. So we wanted to make sure that remains dry and that it's quickly absorbent as well. So we tested several fabrics for that, from Coolmax to, you know, to a different sort of polyester blend, to cotton, to merino wool. And we found that ours is made with Lenzing Modal, which is the highest quality of modal that you can get. And we found that to be the best option because it's super soft and it also is quick dry. So that's one of the things we tested. And then we also tested with a couple of different factories. We tested with some domestic factories as well as in China. We did a lot of absorbency testing as well to make sure that the product is absorbing what we claim that it's absorbing. We did some tests with fabrication and GSMs, which we sent to the labs to get tested, just so we know exactly the kind of fabrication that is going into the underwear. And then we sampled with a bunch of women. You know, we made them try pieces from different factories. We made them try, you know, different fabrications, see what was coming out to be the best results.
Got it. Avisha, you mentioned Lenzing Modal. What is that?
So it's a company that makes modal. So Tencel as well is under that that same company. So it's a very...
What is modal?
So modal is a fiber that's made from wood pulp. So it's similar to cotton, but it has slightly softer properties. It also has more quick dry properties. It's kind of like a slightly more elevated cotton. It's a lot softer as well. So, and Lenzing is a company that is constantly innovating in the textile space. And Lenzing is basically a brand name.
Got it. Yeah, as you lost you, I was wondering what that was supposed to mean.
Avisha, it doesn't sound like a very innovative idea. And I'll tell you why I say that, right? Because for babies, we have diapers, which are like underwears with the built-in soaking padding thing, right? So why has this not been a thing till now? And why has this just not taken over the industry as a whole? Because right now, pads need to be changed. They need to be changed like 2 times a day for some, in some cases, even more. And then they're really uncomfortable. And then all of this goes on with it. You make it sound like it is a no-brainer. So why has this not been a no-brainer? Why are the big boys in the town not taking over this product and just launching it left, right, and center?
And why, even after the fact, I think it sounds like a no-brainer more because you just realize that, yeah, this is something that's happening every month for about 35 to 40 years on average, if not more. So when there is this much time and this much, you know, the talk around it, like there's market demand, you know, everything. If it's such a no-brainer, how come more people are not doing it?
Yeah. No, so I'm really glad you said this, Akhil, because it is a very easy product to construct. It's not rocket science. It doesn't require any kind of special machinery or anything like that. It's a very simple construction. I think it's similar to what I was saying about the taboos and how it's so stigmatized and conditioned. And I think this is exactly, also it spills into product usage. People are just more comfortable with what they've been using, also because it takes so much trust for a woman to change her habit, especially in this space, that, you know, it's going to take a lot of education, a lot of testing, and a lot of word of mouth and, you know, peer-to-peer recommendations as well. And why has this product taken so long to come about? You know, if we, again, like rewind back 40, 50 years, if we look at companies like P&G and Kimberly Clark, that, you know, really are spearheaders in the whole personal hygiene space. Funnily enough, a lot of these brands have been created by men, you know, and that's why you haven't seen much innovation in this space as well, because women just got so accustomed to using this. And you would never really think that you could create an underwear that could manage to absorb your flow and be a comfortable product. So we've had women come to us and say, you know, does this work for teenagers? I want my daughter to use it, but she won't use it, but she wants her daughter to use it. She doesn't want her daughter to go through the hassle of pads. She would rather put her in an underwear from day one, but the mother herself is still hesitant to change and to try it. And that tells you how deep conditioning goes, you know, and how deep habits go. And you know, we also get a lot of questions and queries about hygiene. And people ask us, you know, back in the day, women used to use cloth. And the switch to pads was for hygiene and for comfort. Now it's almost, this underwear is almost going back to that whole concept of using cloth. So there's also that. That the pads were there to liberate us from cloth, from having to wash. And now it's kind of like you're bringing it back. Why? Women were not questioning also, you know. During my research, we would ask, you know, what do you currently use to manage your period? And in India, it's mostly pads. And then we ask, well, have you dealt with a rash? And I kid you not, 70 to 80% of these girls responded, yes, I deal with rashes. And still they wouldn't question the pad. They still wouldn't say, oh, I need to switch, you know, I need to use something else. I need to find a new innovation. Maybe look to the West to see what's going on. They just accepted it. And that goes hand in hand with how menstruation has been a taboo topic. It's kind of like, just deal with it. You know, let's just take what you get, and that it is what it is, sort of a thing.
Avisha, since you brought it up, this whole concept of using a cloth and then using reusable underwear. So with the cloth, the basic thing was, you know, you wash it a bunch of times and then it gets diseases on it, and like people get diseases thanks to using that, putting that again and again and again. So what in your product is ensuring that it is, you know, hygienic to use after washing? Or is there a particular technique to wash it? Or is there a particular way, like, you know, is there a product that has to be used?
And I would like to add to that, one of the petroleum CEOs around 1960s gathered all of these big brands and brought a garbage can with him and said, your future belongs in the garbage can, because they were going to launch plastic bags, right? And the whole concept of use and throw feels a lot more hygienic. It feels a lot more like, you know, I'm using a new thing every time. It's going to be on my body. And then I'm going to discard that thing. Same as with toilet paper, same as with bottles of drinks, right? You assume you're using the clean thing. Do you think it is going to be anti-you? A reusable thing, because pads generally also constitute the whole game of I'm going to use it and throw it. So the reusability aspect of it, do you think it's going to go against you more than for you? What is your feeling on that?
I think that is something that will be for me, and, you know, for the brand and product. And the reason I see this is, again, just going back to sustainability, going back to reducing your waste. When we think about approaching corporates, we approach them from the angle of sustainability. You know, but when we're approaching a woman, a consumer, we're approaching her from the angle of comfort. So two very different angles, but both are very valid. And I think the sustainability aspect of it is something that will lift our brand up in the eyes of a corporation or an institution. You know, the reason I say this is because, like, in India, there's currently 1 billion pads thrown into the landfill every month, which is a huge number. And this is not even every single woman in India uses pads. So it's a very small chunk of the market. And that's the level of pollution that it's creating. So, you know, I think the fact that it's reusable will be a huge positive. People will see it in a more positive light because of that. And Vishrut, to answer your question about cloths and how, you know, it was known to sort of cause diseases and whatnot in using it over and over. One thing within our underwear that definitely combats that is the four layer construction of the padding. So the blood that gets collected in a middle layer, which doesn't come into any contact with the skin. So that being said, it's a very concealed layer. And, you know, the whole part of it creating diseases and whatnot, it's also very down to how someone uses the product. Are they using it in the right way? Are they washing it in the right way? If someone was using cloth, they may not have had access to washing it in the right way with detergent, you know, giving it a thorough wash. So a lot of these things are very speculative. And it also is attached to the idea of it being unhygienic, you know, wearing an underwear, which is containing your blood all day. That's another question we get a lot. Is it hygienic? And the question is really, what's unhygienic about it? You know, at the end of the day, the blood that's coming out of you when you're menstruating is actually what the lining that nurtures an embryo, you know? And that is also, again, attached to the stigma of, you know, a period's being a taboo, impure, and so on and so forth. So it's a very multi-layer situation, I would say, from product to perception to taboo. And, you know, I really hope as a nation, we can really start to pick these layers apart and shine more light on this whole idea of menstruating.
I'm going to go shamelessly plugging our episode now and say that, you know, for all those of you who want to hear more on this whole concept of how much of a taboo this is and what people in India are doing, check out our previous episode. It's with Purvi from Anahat for Change. And we have gone very much in depth about all the taboo surrounding periods, menstruation and whatnot. So Abhishek, can we get a little bit about you? Where do you come from? How did you go from, you know, having a clothing brand to this? And what led you to getting to the clothing brand? What was that all about? Can we get a bit about you?
Sure. So I'm born and brought up in Hong Kong. And I ended up going to boarding school when I was 15 years old. I went to an all-girls boarding school in the US. So that's sort of where the feminine side of me came in. And I've always grown up in a huge family. Both my mom's and dad's side are huge. I have around 50 first cousins, and that's not a joke at all. And most of these cousins were women. So I was always surrounded by sisters of all ages, you know. And that combined with my all-girls boarding school experience, women's issues were always at the forefront to me, you know. Growing up, seeing what kind of taboos were put around women, how my brothers got permission for some things and my sisters didn't. All of these things started playing at me and it wasn't sitting well at all. And so my boarding school gave me a great education. Everyone there was a feminist, more or less. And from there, I went on to study in Boston. I went to Bentley University and I got a marketing degree. And I was always into fashion from being a little girl. And so I pursued further education at Parsons. And I always thought, you know, a career in fashion was always paved out for me. And I did a couple of different jobs within the fashion industry. I decided to start my own brand. And that brand really did tie in, you know, craftsmanship in India to sort of making it more accessible and more relatable for the Western market. And very funnily, I found it very hard to sell clothes. You know, it just didn't come naturally to me. I wasn't able to do a sales pitch of why a woman needs another dress in her closet. So I was very sheepish about sales and I was very shy about it. You know, women's issues always being a part of me, really, throughout my entire life. And changing our giving back model to menstruation as well. These things started coming more and more to the forefront of my thinking and, you know, what I would want to do in this in during my lifetime as well. And, you know, stumbling upon this product, I found it to be a very disruptive product, something that can really liberate women and also help combat the waste that's created by the menstrual industry. And the best thing about it is that it's a necessity. And the fact that it's a necessity and can really, you know, improve a woman's life, I have no shame in selling it. And I really enjoy trying to convince someone to try the product out. So that's how I landed upon here. And doing it for the Indian market instead of doing it back home in Hong Kong was also a no-brainer because India, one, it's a huge market. I have roots in India. I have a feeling of wanting to give back to this country. And I just find it a fascinating market, which I love learning about every day.
Avisha, all three of us are boarding school people. And
oh, yeah? Where did you guys go?
So I was in the law school, Sinar, and he was in Singapore.
Okay, UWC?
Yes, UWC.
Okay.
And another commonality, Marwadis unite. I also have 51st cousin. Then
yes,
I good. Completely relate to exactly what you're saying.
Nice. You guys know what boarding school is like, and it really shapes how you think. You know, the people around you and everything. So I think that my education there is really what shaped who I am today and how I see the world and how I think.
I feel that time of confinement that schools provide, like when you're at home and you're confined and you're not free, and you just, if at that moment a kid is placed in a boarding school, something completely rewires. And the way you see the world changes, the kind of effect your family can have on you changes, the kind of control your family has on you changes, right? And you're viewed as an outlier. So when you plan on doing this, when you say that I'm going to be making women underwear or women pads underwear, right? What was the reaction of your family? And were they up for it? Were they very supportive? And how did it go?
All the women in my family were very supportive. My mom was super supportive. My nanny was super supportive. You know, they said it's a great idea. My dad is very much like, he is very iffy about India. You know, he finds it a very difficult place to work. So he was kind of struggling with that idea. Yeah, I think he also falls into the category of, you know, there's not much for me to participate in this conversation. But the women in my family have been overly supportive, and I think it just adds to my brand in a way. You know, the idea of women being there for each other, women supporting each other throughout my entire life. I think it's the women who have lifted me up when I've had challenges or when I felt down or low, because a woman can really relate. That's been a really great learning.
So in fact, this goes the other way to most of the conversations that we have, where it's like the elder women in the family and things, the way they've been coming along, you don't talk about certain topics, and you know, it's just something that happens in families. Also, going back to the boarding school point, the three of us, all of us are from boarding schools in three different countries and in three different types of boarding schools. Akhil was in a military kind of a school in Sanaar. You went to an all-girls school in the US, and I was in Singapore. I think the advantage with a UWC and a Singapore for me was, as Akhil was saying, you know, when you're confined, and Singapore is such a safe place that way. Like there was never a thing that, you know, oh yeah, you know, this, there's going to be some kind of crime, you can't stay out late. And I think that was a real bonus. But also coming back to family and coming back to the women in your family, you know, for you, you don't even have to just deal with your own family. You also, you're married, so there's your that side of the family as well. How was that whole thing about, like, you know, because women working and, like, you know, how was that whole thing? What was that conversation like? Was it even a conversation?
It wasn't, to be honest. I think that what makes it hard is the living in two countries, living between Hong Kong and Bombay. I think that's what makes it challenging. But besides that, it was really not a conversation. My husband is super supportive of what I'm doing. He really believes in what I'm doing. You know, after I've only been married less than 6 months. But after getting married, I have way more respect for married women, because married women, especially in today's generation where, you know, it's the norm for a woman to work, to manage work as well as to manage family, to juggle the two. I don't have kids of my own yet, but when I see women who have kids and they work, it just blows my mind. Because, you know, and I have a newfound respect for women, if that was even possible. Just to see the amount that they juggle, you know, they're always on the lookout for others. They're always on the lookout for the family. So they take that pressure and they take that responsibility upon themselves. And then you add a layer of work and work responsibility to that as well. And it's pretty amazing, really.
So honestly, the reason I asked you this, because, I mean, I thought about it 3 or 4 times before even thinking of asking you this, because according to me, in an ideal world, this conversation isn't one that needs to be had. You know, you are working, your partner is working, or they're not, whatever, to each their own, right? You have that conversation amongst yourselves and you go on with it. That I think the fact that we even have to think about this, that, okay, yeah, you're married and you have kids, and how are you going to deal with that? And is the family going to be okay? I think that is a type, I mean, is something that we've left behind in the past. So it's so nice to hear that you have come across an environment where it's not something that is even questioned, or, you know, it's something that's understood and supported, because I think the support of family is very, very important. That's another theme that we've noticed. So you said the women in your family were very supportive. Your husband has been very supportive. Can you list a couple of, I mean, can you sort of point out a couple of occasions where they have been, or where their support has taken you that extra mile?
With my husband, he is really my sponge. So when I, you know, and being an entrepreneur can be a really frustrating and emotionally taxing experience. So he's the first person I call when I'm just hitting the wall. And he's always there to lift me up, you know. My nanny has been a huge supporter. She just thinks the product is great and very much needed in the world. And then, you know, support is also very much so in the positive feedback that we get. When a friend or a customer messages us and says that they love the product, that is, to be honest, the biggest support that I can get, because then I know what I'm doing is working. And it feels like there's purpose in it, you know. In the day in and day out of work, first of all, time flies by like this, you know. You don't know where your day has gone. And you sometimes very often forget why you're also doing this, you know, because just one task after another, you forget the purpose. So when we get messages like this, it's the biggest booster, really.
So Avisha, another thing in addition to the boosters, you've been a sort of booster to us, because you were our first cold outreach as such. You were the first person I sort of reached out to, just, I was seeing you on Instagram. And, you know, I remember telling Akhil about this. I was like, hey, dude, guess what? I reached out to someone I reached out to a brand on Instagram where I don't know who this person is. We have a couple of mutual followers, so that may work in my favor. But apart from that, I don't know who you are. You don't know who I am. You don't know who the Thought Bistro is. And let's see what happens.
It's totally my pleasure. I'm honestly honored to have been, you know, found on Instagram, and you know, it's a two-way street, honestly.
I think it's helped in us furthering our cause of creating value and, you know, finding people who think in ways of, you know, leaving the world a better place than we found it. So we have this, you know, ongoing thing that, you know, we want to try and create as much value as we can. So like, you know, that works in our favor. And as you said, it's a two-way street. It has to work. You know, the response from you was, really nice. And I really appreciate how you were such a sport about being like, yeah, sure, let's get on call and let's take it from there. And I think, 10 days later, we're recording?
Yeah.
You're an absolute sport for doing that. Yeah. Like, it's not easy just connecting with random strangers and being like, okay, I'm going to be on your podcast.
Absolutely.
Thank you for coming on and being such a sport.
So let me now switch the question and see what got you guys to start this what is your vision for this podcast?
The vision is we want to connect to 150 founders a year. So in 2 years' time, when we have over 300 founders associated with us, we would like to be in a position where if someone comes to us and tells us, hey, I would like to start a business in women's health and period products and, you know, something around this, we are like, yeah, we have Avisha, we have Anahat, we have the Pink Box, we have a bunch of others. We know what you guys want. So we understand your pain points, your needs, and we are able to identify a sort of hole in the industry rather than being like, oh, you know, yeah, just start up another generic brand which does stuff that's already happening. We can identify what you guys all collectively need and help that person find a solution which fills up that hole. So therein creating value for them, creating value for you guys, and then creating value all around.
We really wish to connect all of our founders together and, you know, build everybody's business together. Hopefully we can connect you to like a lot of businesses and maybe a lot of our viewers eventually, which will increase. So Vishrut and I, we came across this book called The Theory of Constraints. And in The Theory of Constraints, the thing is, one thing holds back your business. If you expand on that one thing, suddenly your business, you know, grows multifold, and then a next thing will hold back your business. So a constraint is good in the sense that that is the thing you need to focus on in order to really blast off, right?
Sure. And it'll keep you growing as well.
Exactly. So what we thought is that we'll install sensors in different kind of manufacturing units and we'll come up with what their constraints are and then build a business around that. So when we came across that, we thought that sensors will be very expensive. So what is easier to do is just straight up ask the founders. So now we straight up ask the founders, what exactly do you need in your business? And then we come up with other founders who will fulfill their exact needs, right? And if tomorrow somebody wishes to be a founder and let's say you require something very special for one of the layers in the underwear and you wish to source that, you come to us and be like, can you source that for us? And we'll find someone who will source it or who will get it to you, right? So that is the vision. I don't know how real it is, but we are trying to make it very real. We are talking to a lot of incredible people like yourself.
Kind of like a virtual co-working space in a sense. A virtual community.
Community, co-working space, brand managers, incubators, accelerators. I think we have used a whole range of terms. And I think as and how we go on, that list of terms will keep growing. But I think basically the fun for us lies in creating value. I think both of us thrive on finding ways to create value and, you know, exploring different avenues. And that's what we're trying to maximize through this. So, and also we want to learn. I think the amount I have learned about women's health in the past 3 days and the amount I have spoken about menstruation and periods and period products and disposal of period products, I think is not something that I have ever done before. So, yeah, I think the learning is so beautiful because you're learning about so many different industries, so many different founders, so many lovely stories.
Yeah, bring it.
It is a very selfish endeavor because, you know, there's a thing called the five chimps theory that your personality is built around the five people that you hang out with consistently. For us, those other three people keep switching based on who the founders are or who the co-founders are and continuously being pumped with the idea of business, needs, values, community, what is happening, right? We might be able to evolve ourselves in a better manner. So that's also the hope out of it.
Entrepreneurial journey is as much personal as it is professional. And I think that's what makes it super interesting because your two worlds are so woven so closely together. Yeah, that's what I'm experiencing every day.
It's your baby. It's at the end of the day, what you're doing is your baby.
Yeah, absolutely. It becomes a priority in your life. You never thought, you know, work could be have so much significance. But everything starts making sense, you know, when you come across those people and they just can't stop talking about work. That starts to make sense and I can start to relate to that, you know. Yeah.
Lovely, Avisha. So I think we're going to just about bring this to a close. So we have this tradition on our podcast where our previous guest has left a question for you. And we would like you to answer that question and leave a question for the upcoming guest. The question for you is, what kind of premium do you assign to a human over a machine to call yourself a social organization?
I think it's contributing to society. You know, you would value the human doing doing the work instead of machine as a way of being able to contribute to society, contribute to unemployment percentages, and, you know, in a sense also giving back and playing your part.
Interesting. Can we have your question?
Okay, I need to have a think for a second.